calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Welcome, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast. Are we going to do it again? Are we going to get back into this debate? Is global warming real? Mark Morano's with us with CNS News Service. CNS is... hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, thanks for having me on.
Great to have you here. CNS, Cybercast News Service. I understand the chairman is Brent Bozell, who runs the Media Research Center, which is the company that has been spamming the FCC about obscenity things. Are you separate from that, or is all the same thing, or what?
No, actually, we're completely separate. That's the Parent Television Council you're referring to, and they are
right.
Both headed. We're headed by Brent Bozell. That's headed by Brent Bozell, but we're totally different. In fact, the PTC is headquartered out in Los Angeles, and there's no direct affiliation with us other than we share the same chairman.
Okay, and that organization really seems to be focused on conservative, in quotes, issues that have to do with indecency, and yours is focused on what?
We focus on politics, news, culture, and people try to say we're conservative, and I will say this, we're certainly conservative-oriented in the selection of our stories, because, as you know, mentioning Brent Bozell's name, we believe that particularly in cultural areas, whether we're talking about abortion, gun control, issues like that, the media, we try to fill the void on those kind of issues, and even the environment, and of course, politics. So I won't sit here and tell you that we're conservative bias, but I will say that we do select conservative-oriented stories that we think the mainstream media may have overlooked, or the establishment media, whatever term you want to use.
Okay, we're talking with Mark Morano, CNS News, senior staff writer. Our question, which we're going to get into in larger form throughout this hour, is global warming part of Earth's cycle having little to do with human activity, and is an avian flu pandemic unavoidable? Our quote for the day, by the way, from Theodore Roosevelt, the Republican Roosevelt, December 3rd, 1907, when he was president, to waste, to destroy our natural resources, to skin and exhaust the land instead of using it so as to increase its usefulness, will result in undermining in the days of our children the very prosperity which we ought by right to hand down to them, amplified and developed, our quote for the day. Now, first of all, you folks have issued this article, November 15th, which basically, well, a climatologist Monday, this is the lead sentence, a climatologist Monday was quick to dismiss the Fox News special on global warming, complaining that it featured profoundly juvenile climate science. You're going after the global warming piece that ran, a special that ran on Fox News. You're going after Fox News.
Yeah, actually, and it's, a very interesting thing, as mentioning our organization, Cybercast News Service. I've been on Fox News. I've been on O'Reilly. I've been on over half a dozen times. O'Reilly, Hannity and Combs, Fox and Friends. Interestingly enough, we've done, and I actually used to work for Rush Limbaugh, the television show, back in the 1990s. So you're talking to someone who is not unfamiliar with conservative circles in Washington. But I can tell you that this article we did, regardless of your take, if you will, on global warming, whether you're a believer, an agnostic, a doubter, whatever phrases you want to use, or whether you think the evidence is overwhelming, we got essentially a blackout in the media of conservative media. Now, interestingly enough, that means Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, all these big-time talk shows refused to talk about this story. It did not exist. The Washington Times, outlets that I previously...
Pro or con.
What's that?
Pro or... In other words, they didn't. On the one hand, they didn't attack Fox for carrying it or attack its content. And on the other hand, they didn't praise Fox for it or say, hey, gee, look at this.
No, it did not exist. There was total silence. Yeah. And interestingly enough, I thought it was a big story in that nothing to do with the science of global warming, whichever way you take on it, but the fact that you had the CEO of Fox News, Roger Ailes, who, by the way, was my former employer as working for Rush Limbaugh, the television show. He was the executive producer for Rush Limbaugh, the television show, back in the 1990s. You had an allegation by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and by Lori David, the wife of comic Larry David, that he was dragged kicking and screaming to an Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said he was dragged kicking and screaming to a
He being Roger Ailes.
Yeah, Roger Ailes was dragged kicking and screaming by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And this essentially imparted in Roger Ailes the importance of doing a global warming documentary. Now, regardless of what you think, it was not fair and balanced. It was 100% the other side. They didn't even, as CNN did, I believe, earlier this year or late last year, I think it was earlier this year, on a global warming documentary, at least devoted 5 minutes to the global warming skeptics, if you will. And, of course, they threw in all the oil and gas funding, whoever. I think they had Patrick Michaels on. But at least they covered it. Fox News didn't even cover that angle. All they did was put a verbal disclaimer at the beginning of the show. So I thought this would be a big story. And I was wrong in terms of it getting any kind of traction. Fox News felt no heat, essentially, other than from groups like Competitive Enterprise Institute. And
why do you think that is?
I just think, and, you know, this is purely speculation, that people were afraid, that this is the hand that feeds a lot of the conservative alternative media, the Internet, the talk radio.
You mean nobody wants to take on Roger Ailes?
No one wants to take on. In fact, I can tell you that there's a major player in this who wrote an article for a major conservative think tank, which I won't mention names, citing my article from CNSNews.com along with Randy Hall, who shared the byline in the original article we did on this, and he mentioned Roger Ailes' name and was told by this major think tank that he would not be able to publish the article unless all references to Roger Ailes were taken out. And he ended up doing that. But
Mark Morano. We're talking with Mark Morano. He's a senior staff writer for CNS News and a conservative news site. And it sounds to me like you're just...
I understand your point by saying conservative because of Brent Bazell's chairman, but if you look at our site, we follow AP style. We get many attacks from conservatives, particularly on cultural issues, because we'll go to an event and we'll just cover the left side. We don't even have reaction from the right. So we do... it's a story selection thing, but we actually do pieces, and I think many liberals appreciate our site because we do straight liberal stories with no reaction from conservatives, especially.
Right, but you wouldn't characterize yourself as a progressive news site.
Not progressive, no. But I mean, you know, I'm trying to say.
And you wouldn't you wouldn't characterize yourself as the mainstream media.
No, we'd say alternative media, rising new media, but to say conservative, just pigeonhole us a little. We're not.
I think
we're a Newsmax or a World Net Daily. If you take a look at our site.
Yeah, they tend to have a bit of a scream to them. Point taken, and I'm sure our listeners got it. Mark Morano, it sounds to me like you're describing Roger Ailes as the head of a crime family.
Well, now keep in mind, no one's alleging Roger Ailes did anything here. This is just people who are.
No, I mean that's the point. If you're in business in New York City in 1975, and whether you're in the construction business or whether you're working for the New York Post, you don't take on John Gotti because you'll end up dead.
You know, I leave that for your analysis. I don't know. My take on it, especially having worked for Roger Ailes, I just think people are. It's a lot of it is in, and I think it's on the left and right. Obviously, it's ego. It's FaceTime. They don't want to do anything that's going to jeopardize their FaceTime. In fact, Accuracy in Media, Cliff Kincaid wrote an article, essentially the gist of which I just told you, how many conservatives were afraid to take on Fox News.
Sure.
It essentially for them is the only outlet, especially in television, at the moment, and so they don't want to be seen as going on and bashing, particularly a personal attack on the chairman. Keep in mind, we don't know if this story is 100% true, or even true at all, what Robert F. Kennedy said about how Roger Ailes being influenced by...
Roger Ailes has not denied it. I would suspect that if it were not true, Roger Ailes would have been one of the very first to come forward and say, "Hey, wait a minute, no."
Yeah, well, it could be an exaggeration. There could be a kernel of truth. We don't know. Roger Ailes will not comment. Fox News will not comment on it. We do know that they ran the documentary that was not fair and balanced by any stretch. And I don't care where you stand on global warming. You would be hard pressed to find PBS, CNN, or any other network, even the free speech television that I get on Dish Network, some of these progressive networks, have done a documentary that didn't even put up what they would consider the corporate shills, the Patrick Michaels. You know, they didn't even put up the people to knock them down. They just didn't even acknowledge it.
But we have a situation here, Mark Morano, where, for example, in The Independent today, the big thaw, global disaster, will follow if the ice cap in Greenland melts. The ice cap in Greenland has dropped 100 feet. 100 feet this summer. I mean, this is not happened in 1,000 years. I mean, it typically moves a foot a year. It's moving 1,000 feet a year right now. I mean, people are freaking out. You say fair and balanced, but I mean, if you had a special on gravity, would you have somebody on saying, "Well, it's really not gravity; it's just a supernatural force"?
Well, you're assuming that the evidence is that overwhelming. I mean,
yeah,
humans cause I heard them say we had less than a minute to go, but the bottom line is art, from everything I've read, and I think this is even agreed, and I read this in the Washington Post, Antarctica is gaining ice at the moment. Parts of Greenland are gaining ice, in terms of in some parts are losing ice. The polar ice caps are seem to be receding, but this is all part of natural cycle, and yet is it influenced by man? Yes. The question is how much? The question is man causing catastrophic climate change, or is man causing barely perceptible climate change? And, and if you actually talk to the real scientists on this, and not a lot of the Hollywood or just regular environmental groups, the Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s, the Greenpeace's, you'll find that the consensus is that this is going to be very modest increase. And that is a fact, and I think it's so easy to cherry-pick, well, this is receding and this is happening, and it's just not the case. There is no
Got your point, Mark, and I understand your position, but I'm just fascinated by, you know, your story that Roger Ailes is the godfather here.
Well,
anyway, Mark, I know you didn't say that. I'm putting words in your mouth. CNSnews.com for more information. Thanks, Mark, for being with us.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You might like to dance.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Yeah, who are you going to serve? You going to serve democracy? You going to serve China? Looks like George W. Bush is going to serve China. Well, you know, as long as China keeps serving Walmart, why not? Because Walmart keeps giving him money. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. George in Kobe, Japan on the line?
Yes, hello. Is that the famous Tom Hartman?
I guess it is. Hey, George, how come you're calling us from Japan?
Well, here I am. Imagine it's... coming up for 2:30 a.m. in the morning of Tuesday, and
must have been a sleepless night.
Well, I've just seen one of these videos, one of these American videos here, which they have in surprising abundance, and I don't have to get up too early tomorrow morning, so I thought, well, I'll follow up on this little lead that I set up one of these wretchedly named blog sites about a week ago, and a young fellow somewhere in the United States contacted me and said, you better get on the blower to this man, Tom Hartman. Where are you, by the way, Tom?
I'm in Portland, Oregon.
Ah, right. Well, that gives me a location on 866 area code. And
well, 866 actually is a toll-free nationwide telephone number.
Is it really? Well, there we are. 866 is a toll-free line. Well, then I'm saving some money on this dial-back thing computer from Seattle.
Yeah, there you go. It's if you're calling. Well, yeah, if you're calling into the United States from the United States, it's toll-free. So, anyhow, George, what motivated you to call the program from Japan?
Well, yeah.
What do you want to bring up?
The issue, I think. The word was referred to in the previous piece you were doing. It's democracy, and it so happens that I did a little thing on. It's called Democracy Reaches the Kids, which was picked up by a lawyer in Detroit who presented it through the labyrinth of the immigration process, and he came out at the other end of what is to believe the only extraordinary capacity visa ever issued by the USA in the area of educational reform. And to give you a little info on that, Tom, extraordinary capacity is limited to something like, they estimate, 300 or so people per year who have IDs.
No, I understand, George. What's the significance? What, you know, for our listeners, we're using a lot of time here. For our listeners, what's the point?
The key point is that the school system in America is grotesquely
badly broken,
failing the young people of America who shine with that particularly special light. And I would
you think you have a solution for that?
The reason seems to be that they've gone off into specialization of subjects information when the general and deeper needs of the young person and of America and of the world are simply simply given a back seat. And
sure. Another way of saying it is that we are focusing on linear thinking and we've abandoned critical thinking, for example.
You could say
compartmentalize subject rather than global thinking. But again, George, forgive me for being insistent here, but what's the bottom line? What's the point? Did you want people to visit a particular website? Is that why you called? Or is there a particular issue that you want to advocate for or against?
I specified, Tom, an alternative to what's going on in basic education, and it doesn't... You know, you've got tremendous achievement in higher stuff, but the lower stuff is one is losing control of the kids. And if you can,
well, George, I have to ask you. I have to ask you. Drop me an email, Tom T H O M
at tomhartman.com. I can send you my little pamphlet, and that would be the answer.
Yeah, let's do that. Tom T H O M at tomhartman.com. T H O M at tomhartman.com. Hartman with two N's, and I actually do get and read my own email, and I will I'll respond to it. And, you know, if it's worth something putting on the air, I'll do it. But anyhow, thanks a lot for the call, and it's nice to know that somebody in Japan is listening to us. Phil in Tampa Bay, Florida on the line. Hey, Phil, what's on your mind today?
Hi. You know, you had the guest complaining that he couldn't get his program or his thoughts, you know, with their propaganda across about how global warming doesn't exist.
Yeah, we had a conservative writer for a conservative news, however you want to characterize it, organization saying that there was a blackout among the conservatives about the Fox News special
on
global warming.
Because everyone sees what's going on with the weather. You can't deny it. And now I think it's become an established fact among people who can walk and chew gum at the same time. These are the same people in the 70s and maybe part of the 80s that said cigarette smoking doesn't cause cancer.
Right.
Remember, they used to say, when you light the match, it's the sulfur.
I remember it well. I remember. Yeah, you know, I'm old enough to remember Ronald Reagan going on TV in a doctor's uniform, in a lab coat, you know, with a name badge on, playing a doctor, saying, "If you have a sore throat, smoke Chesterfields."
Yeah. The point is that
even if you're not a smoker,
no one would give airtime to anybody who would say being a heavy smoker has no consequence to your health. Only some kind of an ideologue.
Yeah, well, and that's the point. What he's saying is that the right-wing ideologues are not defending the idea that global warming ain't so. And I find it actually rather fascinating that he said even the corporate shills didn't get into any of the conservative media. And it causes you to wonder what's going on. Thanks a lot for the call, Phil. 27 minutes past.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Hey. On the road again.
Oh, yeah, you tell him, Tom, right?
Now I locked my doors, the sun went down. Said goodbye to Boston town. Mass Turnpike to Route 15. You take me on down to the New York scene. Hum another ties, it sure is pretty. Think about the women in New York City. On the road again.
There you go. Welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour, coming up on 25 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Speaking of being on the road just as an FYI, we will be doing this program live on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day of this week, and on Friday the day after. The only days, to the best of my knowledge, that we'll be taking off this year are the Friday before and the Monday after December 10th and 11th, which would be, I think, the 9th and the 12th. I'll be in Germany on those days. And Peter B. Collins, good friend and brilliant radio broadcaster. Peter and I both used to be on IE America Radio Network back when it was the first progressive network years ago. Peter B. Collins will be filling in for me. So it'll be a treat for you, actually. So I want to get into, we've talked about the climate and climate change, and there is a major story right now about what's going on in Greenland. The people in the United Kingdom are freaked out, particularly England. The last time the Great Conveyor Belt, that is the Gulf, what we call the Gulf Stream, you know, all that warm water that's going up around Florida, that's coming up across the equator, this seems to drive hurricanes. It actually comes out of the Pacific. It comes around the southern tip of Africa, and flows at the surface of the ocean up around the east coast of South America and North America, and then heads over into the center of the North Atlantic and about 200 miles south of Greenland. By that point, it has lost so much heat and so much moisture into the air that it becomes saltier than the rest of the Atlantic and cooler than the rest of the Atlantic, and it settles down in the bottom of the Atlantic, and that then drives, you know, that draws the water forward, and it also drives a river 100 times larger than all rivers on Earth combined, drives a river of water at the floor of the ocean that goes from the North Atlantic back down, you know, following pretty much the same track back down between Africa and South America and back around the southern tip of Africa. And it comes back out in the Pacific as much as 1,000 years later, the whole loop. And 12,500 years ago, more or less, that loop shut down for about 1,200 years. And during that time, England was permafrost, continuously permafrost. It had the climate from central Alaska. And because it's at that latitude, and the rest of Europe was in an ice age. And a lot of people are very concerned that that thing might shut down. And what's keeping it going is the fact that that water is salty, or is warm, rather. And as it loses its heat, it becomes saltier and cooler. In fact, during the winter, England gets more heat from the Gulf Stream, or the Great Conveyor Belt, as it's known now, gets more heat from the Gulf Stream than it does from the sun. Well, it turns out that if enough water melts from the glaciers in Greenland or the polar ice cap, the contamination of that salty water by fresh water from the glaciers and from the ice cap, if it's done rapidly enough, will shut down that Gulf Stream and throw Europe into a new ice age. And the east coast of the United States, by the way, will have a few problems as well. Winters will get much, much more ferocious, and it's possible that we could even see glaciation. So a lot of people are very worried about this. And now this new story, the research shows disturbing studies on the opposite side of Greenland. This is on the north side, the giant Jakobshavn Glacier, 4 miles wide, 1,000 feet thick, the biggest land mass. It's moving toward the sea at the rate of 113 feet a year. Normal annual speed of that glacier, 1 foot a year. On the southern end, there's another glacier, which is disappearing very rapidly. This just got a whole lot of people just totally flipped out. The Independent did a piece on this today. This is brand new science. I mean, this is like just in the last few weeks this stuff has been released. In fact, it hasn't even been published yet. It's going to be published next week in Geophysical Research Letters, which is one of the main science publications for geophysicists. And it shows a sudden decline in the Helheim Glacier. That's a river of ice that grinds from the inland ice cap of Greenland to the sea through a narrow rift in the mountain range. Professor Slawak Tawliski of the Department of Earth Sciences at the University of California, Santa Cruz, says that glacier has dropped 100 feet this summer. Now, this could produce some significant problems. In addition to throwing the world into an ice age, it could also cause parts of New York City and London to be underwater, much of Florida to be underwater. They suggest that this one glacier alone, that the first one that I, or the second one that I mentioned, the southern glacier that is disintegrating so rapidly in Greenland, that one glacier is acknowledged to be responsible for 3% of the annual rise in sea levels worldwide. So we're looking at some serious problems here. But, you know, still you've got the right wing out there, or you've really got the corporatists. You've really got the people who are in the pockets of the big oil companies saying, well, you know, science isn't in yet. It's we don't know. It's we'll wait and see. It's So there's that story, that news story. And then, you know, in the news also is this torture story. And I can't let this slide by. I have to share this with you. And it's just incredible. There's this piece, first of all, in Rolling Stone, December 17th, 2001. Strapped to a polygraph machine was Adnan Ihsan Saeed al-Hahari, 43-year-old Iraqi who'd fled his homeland in Kurdistan, now determined to bring down Saddam Hussein. He insisted repeatedly he was a civil engineer who'd helped Saddam's men to secretly bury tons of biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons. He says they're buried in subterranean wells, hidden in private villas, stashed beneath the Saddam Hussein hospital. Now, keep in mind, this is December of 2001. James Bamford, the guy who wrote the Puzzle Pals, brilliant book. Bamford says if the charges were true, they would offer the White House a compelling reason to invade Iraq and depose Saddam. So they fly this guy to Pattaya to take a polygraph to Thailand. And one small problem. He fails the polygraph. In fact, the FBI concludes, without any doubt at all, with absolute certainty, this guy is making the whole thing up. Why? Because he wants a U.S. visa. He thinks that if he tells the Bush administration what they want to hear, they'll give him a visa. He's lying. And they know that he's lying. So what do? Well, they say, sorry, you're lying. Well, he's working for Ahmed Chalabi. So what does Chalabi do? Chalabi calls up Judith Miller, Scooter Libby's good buddy, and says, let me fly you over to Thailand. There's a guy you need to talk to. This is after the FBI has said the guy's a liar. Judy Miller goes over, interviews him. This is within weeks of the CIA polygraph. She flew to Bangkok to interview him under the watchful eyes of Chalabi's handlers. She makes a couple of calls to the CIA and Defense Intelligence Agency, and they say, yeah, we don't know. I mean, you know, what are they going to say? I mean, yeah, it's a lie. Apparently not. So she reports that unnamed government experts called his information reliable and significant. Her front page story hit the stands December 20th, 2001, front page of the New York Times. Headline, an Iraqi defector tells of work on at least 20 hidden weapons sites. And then she goes on to say, an Iraqi defector describes himself as a civil engineer, said he personally worked on renovations of secret facilities for biological, chemical, and nuclear weapons in underground wells, private villas, and under the Saddam Hussein Hospital in Baghdad as recently as a year ago. If verified, Judy Miller wrote, his allegations would provide, I'm quoting from the New York Times story, would provide ammunition to officials within the Bush administration who had been arguing that Mr. Hussein should be driven from power, partly because of his unwillingness to stop making weapons of mass destruction, despite his pledges to do so. It was a lie. The Bush administration knew it was a lie. Nobody bothered to set Judy Miller straight, or maybe Judy Miller knew it was a lie. Interesting question. Now, that's lie one that got us into the war and Judy Miller's role in it. Here's lie two, and this is where it gets really amazing. ABC News on Saturday reporting on the CIA's, quote, enhanced interrogation techniques, end quote. They list six of them. The attention grab, attention slap, the belly slap, long time standing, the cold cell, and waterboarding. In waterboarding, here's how they describe it. The prisoner is bound to an inclined board, feet raised and head slightly below the feet. Cellophane is wrapped over the prisoner's face and water is poured over him. Unavoidably, the gag reflex kicks in and a terrifying fear of drowning leads to almost instant pleas to bring the treatment to the halt. This person actually thinks they're drowning. According to the sources, CIA officers who subjected themselves to the waterboarding technique lasted an average of 14 seconds before caving in. They said Al-Qaeda's toughest prisoner, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, this is the guy who planned 9/11, won the admiration of his interrogators when he was able to last between 2 hours. Boarded. According to CIA sources, Al-Libi, after 2 weeks of enhanced interrogation, made statements that were designed to tell the interrogators what they wanted to hear. Sources say Al-Libi had been subjected to each of the progressively harsher techniques in turn and finally broke after being waterboarded and then left to stand naked in a cold cell overnight, doused with cold water at regular intervals. His statements became part of the basis for the Bush administration claims that Iraq trained Al-Qaeda members to use biological weapons. Sources tell ABC it was later established that Al-Libi had no knowledge of such training or weapons and fabricated the statements. Why? And this is the problem with torture. Because he was terrified of further harsh treatment. One source said this is the problem of using the waterboard. They get so desperate that they begin telling you what they think you want to hear. In other words, we're in Iraq right now because we use torture. And we got lousy intelligence because the guy told us what he thought we wanted to hear. This is nuts. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And I'm taking my country back.
There you go. We're going to do it. No, George ain't.
I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese. You blew the budget and you bossed Iraq. So I'm taking my country back.
Yeah, we've all got to get together and do that. No doubt about it.
And the treasury drawer.
9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back to our program. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-THOM, 440-8466. A lot on our plate today. I got an amazing story I've got to tell you about a physician that I spoke with back in the East Coast about what some of the docs in the high end of the doctor business are doing to prepare for the bird flu. And also in the next hour, we're going to have Jeffrey Feldman, the editor of Frame Shop, is open. He's going to be talking about the latest frames that the Bush administration is using to try and fool Americans. In the meantime, let's check out the phone lines, hear what you have to say. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you're live and on the air. Hey, Rick.
Well, first of all, Tom, let me tell you what a great American you are to be working during the Thanksgiving Day holiday.
Well, thank you, Rick. It's got nothing to do with being a great American. It's got to do with being an old radio guy. That's what you do in the media, you know?
Well, dedicated professional. How about that?
I'll take that. Thank you.
Okay, well, I wanted to use a couple of examples of this so-called liberal media, you know, the non-Fox News networks, and how they really aren't so liberal. A couple of examples here. Number one, they keep talking about this proposal by John Murtha, if it even was a formal proposal, for an immediate withdrawal from Iraq. He never said immediate.
No, he didn't. The Republicans have lied about what John Murtha suggested. Then they came up with a phony proposal that was a caricature of what he said. It was a cartoon character of what he said. It's this classic straw man argument, which the Republicans are so good at.
Right.
Murtha said, let's do a planned, phased withdrawal. He said it'd probably take 6 months, more or less, but let's do it right, and let's do it in a way that doesn't harm or endanger our troops or Iraq.
And
the Republicans instead came up with this, okay, you got 24 hours to get out, vote on it, yes or no. And it was a joke. And here's what, Rick, here's what I am convinced the reason why the Republicans are so upset about this. And that is that we already know now that the Pentagon has a plan to draw the American troop levels down to around 50,000 by June of next year.
I've heard that.
And clearly they're preparing for the 2006 elections.
Sure.
They want to have, you know, all of the National Guard and the reserves back home and just regular army over there. And most of them redeployed to the military bases that we're building. So basically there won't be any more Americans dying, no matter what happens. And then they would be able to take credit for it. Bush would be able to take credit for it. But because, they were going to start it right after the December elections in 2 weeks and use that as the excuse. But now that John Murtha has come out and said this, anything that the Republicans do is going to look like they're taking the Democrats' advice and they're going to have egg on their face. And so that's why they're so outraged. Not because they don't want the troops to come home, because that's been their plan too. Because obviously the war isn't working, but because they won't be able to claim all the political capital.
And I'll use the other example in the Patrick Fitzgerald Scooter Libby case, where he said that Mr. Libby was the first known source to have outed Valerie Flame.
Right.
The media leaves out the word known.
And so
it doesn't undermine Fitzgerald's case because Mr. Libby was alleged to have committed perjury, and we know how Republicans hate perjury. Oh, do they hate perjury? They'll impeach a president over it.
Yeah, especially if it involves sex. Good point, Rick. Thanks a lot for the call and for pointing it out. This is the stuff that we'll be talking with Jeffrey Feldman about in the next hour. The whole at frameshopisopen.com of how these guys are spinning this stuff. Josh in Alhambra, Illinois. Hey, Josh.
Hi. You know, we're talking about global warming. I'm real big into reef tanks, saltwater fish tanks and that. In the tropics right now, the reefs are getting devastated. I mean, with the ozone layer being as thin as it is and water levels coming, the temperature levels coming up, they're talking right now about a quarter of the Earth's reefs are, you know, absolutely ruined, just dying off.
Right, at this moment, and as much as a half. And the reefs are not only a major source of nutrients and oxygen and whatnot for the oceans. I don't think it's so much oxygen. It might be carbon dioxide the other way around because they're animals. But they're also a major way of sinking carbon.
Right. And
you know, the coral reefs are calcium carbonate. They take carbon and they sink it for thousands of years.
Right. And they block the waves from hitting the shores. It's just going to be a major, major thing. And people,
yeah,
you know, they're trying to cover it up right now.
Yeah. Plus, there
something needs to be done.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you, Josh. And plus, they're a major ecosystem for a lot of different kinds of sea life that can't live without the reefs. John in Seattle, Washington. We got about a minute left, John. What's up?
2 points. The point is the administration went to war, hoping or expecting that Syria and Iran would help them set up a democracy in Iraq. But if the democracy was successful, it would be a threat to both regimes.
Well, this is, I mean, you know, this is what's going on in Egypt right now. I mean, Egypt is talking about having democratic elections, and it could be their worst nightmare, because if you get a majority of the people who are the Islamic fundamentalists saying, yeah, that's the government we want, then Egypt becomes like Iran.
And the other thing is, they said that everybody had the same information, but yet Germany and China were not involved in the war, did not want the war. Nobody talks about that too much.
Well, and the other point that I'm amazed the media doesn't make is that the majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives voted against this. The majority of Democrats in the House of Representatives voted against it, and it was only a very slim majority of Democrats in the Senate who voted in favor of giving the president the authority to go to war if everything else expired and if the inspections didn't work. And he never let the inspections finish out. He never let that thing go all the way. And that was the true tragedy. I mean, not just tragedy. That was the crime. The crime of the Bush administration was to say, we're going to go in. We're going to, you know, the inspectors, pulling the inspectors out. We're going to go in. That's it. You know, no two ways about it. And it's just raw. And then George Bush saying, you know, that don't destroy the oil wells, right? I mean, this is just. Right. Incredible. It's 57 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friend. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Yeah, a fine idea. Speaking of sanity, you know, what really happened? What is going on here? In Washington, D.C. I mean, we've got George W. Bush and Dick Cheney saying that it's irresponsible. These folks saying that his plan for Iraq, that he lied us into this thing. Jeffrey, as we so often do, and I'm so pleased to do, let's turn to Jeffrey Feldman. His website, frameshopisopen.com, for some discussion and insight into the frames that the Bushies are using here. To try and fool the American people. Hey, Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom.
Great to have you here with us. What are you seeing as the major frame out there now? The pot calling the kettle irresponsible?
Yeah, that's what we're seeing in response to these. The Cheney and Bush administration are attempting to defend themselves against accusations that they misled the American people by using an old talking tactic that has worked for them for years. This thing that I call the pot calling the kettle irresponsible, essentially, and I just saw Cheney do this again about an hour and a half ago in his talk to the American Enterprise Institute. But as Democrats accuse the president of misleading the public, Cheney comes out in front of everyone, and he says that it's great to have democratic discussion about policies. It's important for the American people to hear both sides of the issue. But then he says it's irresponsible for anybody to suggest that anyone in the administration lied, which is, of course, what's coming out more and more in a variety of sources, both at home and abroad. And what this is it's the old tactic of accusing the accuser.
It's sort of like don't believe your lying eyes.
Don't believe your lying eyes. And it's incredibly effective in the Internet age, because when Cheney talks, the news runs the story, And when you now do a Google search, for example, and you look at Iraq and lies, you see just as many accusations against the administration as you see accusations of the administration against just about everybody in the United States. So it's an incredibly effective tactic. And the big question is, what do you do when you hear this this particular type of tactic? And it's really important to avoid defending yourself. Just last week, I was listening to a speech that President Clinton gave when he was in Dubai talking to a bunch of students, and he used a tactic that was incredibly effective. He said very simply that it's good that Saddam is gone, but the war is a mistake. And incredibly, Russ Feingold, within hours, repeated that exact same tactic.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than defending themselves and saying we're not liars, they cut right to the bigger picture.
Right. And in fact, one of the things that I thought was really interesting early on with the Bush administration, I believe it was a Frank Luntz document. I may be wrong, but there was a document that came out of the White House in early 2001 that suggested that the primary strategy that the administration should take in dealing with any sort of accusations against them is to never, ever defend themselves, but always attack the source of the information.
Always
the best defense is a good offense.
Exactly. Well, we saw today with Cheney and his speech, which was really incredible, that he gave at 11 o'clock this morning, and they're going to run again on C-SPAN, that Cheney, after he defends himself by attacking the attacker, he paints a picture of horror about what's going on in the country. This is what Robert Reich calls defining the mob at the gate.
Now, if I may interrupt you, Jeffrey,
sure.
I was on the air doing a local program and during Cheney's speech, so I didn't see it, and I suspect a lot of our listeners didn't see or hear it. Can you give us a 5-second or a 5-sentence summary of what Cheney said in his speech this morning?
It was virtually identical to the last speech that he gave, in which he gave platitudes about the importance of democratic debate, about the importance of having an open and honest discussion about the Iraq policy. Then he cut to a discussion of John Murtha's criticism of the administration, where John Murtha, a Democrat from Pennsylvania and a 30-year Marine, been in the House for a long time, suggested that it was time to end the mission in Iraq and transform it into a more nimble strike force that would do better work. There was an incredible hullabaloo in the House of Representatives that resulted from that proposal, and a lot of criticisms were left at the President and Vice President's feet. Cheney defended against Murtha, and then he proceeded to paint a picture of inevitable terrorist attacks being launched against the United States. It was very similar to the types of campaign speeches that he gave when Kerry was gaining in the polls. The more Kerry succeeded in this critique of the administration, the more potential nuclear bombs were going to go off, according to Dick Cheney. And so
right.
That's what Dick Cheney did.
He said, be afraid.
Be afraid, be very afraid, and he called any suggestion that we should cut and run, that's the key phrase that they're using now, that we should cut and run from Iraq would be detrimental to the safety of ordinary Americans.
It's,
and they're really hammering that idea of cut and run really hard, and I think they're going to stick with that for the next couple of weeks.
So whenever any discussion of real issues comes out, whenever there's any discussion of the lies of this administration comes out, their response is,
I've been waiting for you. The circle is now complete. I am the master.
That's,
their response
Cheney,
is to scare everybody. I mean, they really
right.
do try to scare men, women, and children. And Cheney, they pull him out because he's very good at it. I watched with amazement as he spun this image of a world filled with terrorists doing everything they could to get onto our shores. And by the time that he finishes painting that image, he could suggest any solution, and people would be so afraid not to do it that they would.
Well, he's an old Cold Warrior. I mean, he did this with the Soviet Union 30 years ago.
Exactly.
So I suppose it shouldn't surprise us that the exact same tactics. What was it, the Committee for the Present Defense? Do you remember that from the 1960s?
Yes.
Don Rumsfeld was part of that. I don't recall if Cheney was, but they came up with, Rumsfeld actually came up with this theory. This was during the Nixon administration. Richard Nixon came back from China, or back from the Soviet Union, and said, you know, the Cold War is over. We've come up with detente. Henry Kissinger had negotiated this deal. We have detente, and everything's going to be fine now, and we're going to start dismantling our weapons. And immediately, The Committee for the Present Danger gets created, just like the Swift Boat Veterans, and Don Rumsfeld's part of this thing, and as I said, I'm not sure if Cheney was or not. And they come up with this theory that the Soviets have a new submarine weapon that is capable of striking the United States from just hundreds of miles off our shore, and there's no way that we can stop it because they've come up with a new kind of power system that is absolutely transparent to sonar, that it's impossible to detect this thing. And the CIA came back and said, and this was rather public, by the way, the CIA came back and said in the 1960s and said, or in the 1970s, rather, the CIA came back and said, we have no evidence of this. And Rumsfeld said, see, I told you so. The fact that you have no evidence of it is proof that it's there. I kid you not, Jeffrey. I mean, I remember this time very clearly, and they had this whole, they had people, you know, Barry Goldwater got sucked into this thing, and Everett Dirks, I mean, a lot of conservatives in Congress got sucked into this, and they were going along with this Committee for the Present Danger, and they were running TV ads, and they had folks, you know, my father was talking about building a fallout shelter, and it was all this hysteria about weapons of mass destruction that the Soviets had that were so secret, so powerful, there was nothing we could do about it, and it was basically scare the bejesus out of us. Oh, and by the way, send more money to the defense industry, which Don Rumsfeld then became a lobbyist for.
Exactly. I mean, these are threats that only they know about, that only they have access to the information on, and therefore only they can be trusted to defend us. And it's not really ultimately about defending the American public. It's about defining the political landscape in terms of these inevitable and perpetual threats, and then making the case for maintaining Republican power in order to protect the American people.
Yeah,
it really is amazing. What's incredible is that the Democrats, they're very good lately at defining the threats that the administration pose to the Constitution and to the American public. But it's time for them, I think, to step up and define what threats there are out there in the world, so that the public can hear some alternatives and make sense of the Democrats' proposals for national defense.
And the strategy for taking out those threats. I mean, the reality is that when you have terrorist criminals out there, the best way to deal with them is using the criminal justice system. It's how Italy brought down the Red Brigades. It's how Germany brought down the Baader-Meinhof gang. It's how Bill Clinton brought down Tim McVeigh. It's how, it's how England most successfully dealt with the IRA. I mean, this has been done over and over around the world. You don't go in with an army. You use the police.
Exactly.
But the Democrats haven't figured that meme out. There's not a simple way of describing that, and tragically. So frameshopisopen.com, Jeffrey Feldman, you've got a good meme out there for the Democrats. What's the one sentence that the Democrats should most be focusing on right now?
Well, over Thanksgiving, over the next week, when you hear the phrase cut and run, everybody should respond with some version of the shooting gallery frame that John Murtha used. When someone says Democrats want to cut and run, you should not defend yourself. You should say that our troops are sitting ducks. It's a shooting gallery. It's time for that mission to come to a close.
Yeah. Might there be another way of saying it? Let's win.
Let's win.
Let's declare victory and come home.
Complete the mission and come home. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, Jeffrey Feldman, frameshopisopen.com. Great website. Jeffrey, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks, Tom.
Or this afternoon, depending on where you are in the country. Great talking to you. It's 16 minutes past the hour. On the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We've got life.
Oh, look out, the billionaires are coming. Indeed, welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour in the Darwinian world of ideas. We're at the top of the food chain here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS. Give them a call and say hi. They have the latest iPods, all things Macintosh, all things computer for that matter. Zozak in the chat room says, Tom, help us know if the bird flu scare is real or just a fear tactic put forth by our deceptive leaders. Zozak, I think the answer is both. There is no doubt in my mind that George W. Bush and company, in particular and company, will use the potential of a pandemic or an actual pandemic should it begin. And when you have the head of the National Institutes of Health saying it's not a matter of if but when, among other folks, a serious problem. And we'll get into a little more detail on that in the next segment. I want to tell you some stories. I want to tell you a story about a conversation, a very disturbing conversation I had this weekend with a physician at one of our one of the largest medical schools in the United States about that. But first, Greg Gorman is here with us with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, good to be with you.
Glad you made it back alive and safe from Pakistan.
That's right. I made it back from Pakistan. I came back Saturday night. I've traveled halfway around the world. I had a harrowing day on Friday. The last time I think we spoke was on Thursday. And on Friday, we went up to the mountains of Kashmir to a tiny little village. We flew on a helicopter, and then we got trapped up there. Our helicopter left without us, and we had to drive back down. So I have firsthand experience of what it's like to drive on roads that had been closed for almost 45 days due to earthquake damage. We drove in an army van, and I learned that people who live in the mountains of Kashmir drive these roads every day in vans and buses to get down to cities to do their work and back. So it's a very difficult trip. I did it once, and I was completely sore. My back was sore. My arms were sore. You know, these roads are rough. We met people in the mountains who were just as hospitable as you could imagine. And we spent the day with them hearing their stories about the earthquake. And it was quite an eye-opening experience, I have to say, to see how they lived before the earthquake, or to hear how they lived before the earthquake, and to see how they live now. You know, we heard stories about people who lost their relatives right in front of them. We met a man whose mother died right in front of his eyes. She fell off of what was land in front of their house. It just fell out from under her, and she fell to her death. And yet the people are so resilient and so stoic in the fact that they want to rebuild their houses and their lives and take care of their children, you know, just like anyone else in the world would.
Yeah, although a lot of them are still in shock. I can tell you from on and off over a 25-year period doing international relief work myself on four continents, once you've seen the kind of things that you've seen, Greg, and I'm sure you'll confirm this, you're just never the same. Your life is never the same. And frankly, I think it's a positive and important thing that more Americans should be doing, volunteering to get out there and help, whether it's in Kashmir or whether it's in New Orleans.
You know, that's a great point. I have to say I heard that a few times from people over there, is that a lot of people are in shock still. We actually talked to some students, Tom, who we actually went to their school where their school had been, and there were literally no standing buildings, and yet every student who was still alive was walking around carrying their books.
Yeah.
And we were asking ourselves, you know, where are they going? What's going on? And someone came up to us and said, you know, these people are in shock.
Yeah, they're just grabbing for some semblance of normalcy. Yeah, they're just trying to find some semblance of normalcy. It was amazing. In 1980, we took over the Namalo prison farm in Uganda during the great famine there during the war with Idi Amin, and we had 25,000 people. About 300-400 people a day were dying. I mean, part of my job was to use the backhoe and put people in graves in these mass graves. And you don't need to hear my stories. The bottom line is that I think it's great that you went over there and that you saw that and that you did that and that you're spreading the word. And the best website right now, Greg, for people who want to help the folks in Pakistan, what is it?
Well, people can actually go to the Talk Radio News Service website, which is talkradionews.com. We have a link to an ARC website. ARC is the organization that invited us to go. That's Americans for the Resolution of Kashmir. And we have a link on our website that can help people understand what's happening in the region, give some historical perspective, and donate money if they wish to. This is an ongoing problem. It will be a problem, especially in the short term. As winter approaches, and because of the political situation in the area, it will be an ongoing problem, at least through this one generation, if not two.
Oh yeah, I mean this will last long beyond our lifetimes. The impact of this, these disasters are, breathtaking. Just real quickly, Greg, with just a few seconds left. What's hot in Washington D.C. right now?
Well, what's hot, like we just said, we were talking here in the office about the president is back from China. He's back from his long trip to Asia.
Empty-handed.
And he's back to see what we're going to do this week. Of course, it's Thanksgiving week, so not, you know, not a lot's going to happen.
Yeah, and I'd say he came back empty-handed. He didn't get a commitment to release prisoners. He didn't get a commitment to open up religion. He didn't get a commitment to change currency. Nothing. He got nothing.
Don't talk about North Korea either.
Yeah, they basically thumbed their nose at him, you know, patted him on the head and said, nice little George, just keep borrowing money from us. Greg Gorman with the Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Greg. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And dare to say, no! I'm reading Stephen Breyer's new book, and the member of the United States Supreme Court. It's fascinating. It's actually I'm thinking about making it my recommended BuzzFlash book for next month. And he comes out and he says, well, you know, Nike should have the right to lie. And I'm like, you know, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. Zozak in the chat room says, have you heard of nanomasks for the bird flu? Yeah, I have. These are masks that can catch a particle down to a half a micron, 0.5 microns. And this brings me to the story of the fellow that I came across over the weekend. On the weekend, an old friend of mine who is, shall we say, a high-ranking medical official. I don't want to name this person, but he works at a major medical school in the United States, and he's an old friend. And we were just talking, and he said, you know, all the doctors here, and this is in a major city in the United States. He said all the doctors that he knows are stocking up on Tamiflu, a personal stash, and getting these masks, and even some of them are like buying gold and silver coins and going in together on buying property out in the woods. I mean, you know, it's like people hunkering down to survive a few months of absolute chaos. I say, you're kidding. And he's like, no. He says, you know, now it makes sense that physicians would be getting things like Tamiflu, because if they're going to be first responders, if they're going to be responding to an emergency, then of course they have to have protection against an infectious agent. But I was just startled to hear this. You'll recall it was on this program at least a year ago, that I first shared with you the story from the Wall Street Journal, in which they pointed out that wealthy individuals in the United States were stocking up on Tamiflu in anticipation of the possibility of a bird flu epidemic, because this bird flu is nothing new. And, I mean, it's been around for 5 years. And although it still has not yet mutated into the human form, there are literally billions of mutations a day, and most people in the business figure it's just a matter of time. Now, the question, of course, is, if it mutates into a human infectable form, will it be highly virulent? Will it be a very deadly form, kill a lot of people? In which case, it may not travel very fast, like SARS, for example. SARS was easy to control. Ebola is easy to control because it kills people so fast, it doesn't travel very much. Unlike, for example, AIDS, which kills people very slowly. And even though it's very, very hard to transmit, you have millions of people around the world infected with it because it has such a long latency period, such a long period of time before it kills people. So, in any case, if it becomes a highly infectious strain, it may burn itself out or it may be stoppable. If it becomes a not particularly dangerous strain, then it may be like the two pandemics we've had since 1918, one in the 60s, one in the 70s, as I recall, where you simply had a, you know, fairly, you know, nasty kick-your-butt flu that took out, you know, a lot of elderly people and weak people, but, you know, wasn't an earth-stopping disaster. But if it's just a little over the edge, I think the mortality rate for the Spanish flu was something like 4 or 5%. I mean, you know, which is pretty high. Then it could be a really serious problem. So, yeah, the question: here's the bottom line for me on this. And in fact, the question, I guess, to ask is, has the Bush administration's incompetence set us up for the greatest natural disaster and national disaster? It's not really a natural, I guess you could call it a natural disaster, although so much of it has to do really with our agricultural practices. Has the Bush administration's incompetence set us up for the greatest national disaster since the Civil War? I mean, here you have Republicans just recently voting down money for the bird flu, while Bill Frist is running around saying, unfortunately, the United States is woefully underprepared to respond in the event of a pandemic outbreak. We have a responsibility to focus much greater energy on preparing for avian influenza and similar public health threats, whether natural, accidental, or incidental, or intentional in origin. That, now you've got the flu of 1918. They've reconstituted the thing, and they're shipping it around the world, around the United States to various labs. Everybody, you know, whoa, what if one of these vials breaks? Well, let's hope not. So, you know, should we be alarmed? Should we freak out? Should we, you know, batten down the hatches? Should people be storing 3 months' worth of food and water and you know, figuring out how, you know, converting all their savings to gold? I don't think so. But I could be wrong. I just have to say, I don't want to be alarmist. I don't want to freak people out. And at the same time, I'm telling you, there are some people whose opinions I respect who are freaked out. And one of the things that freaks them out the most is the George Bush and the Republicans in this administration, because they are so intent on keeping tax cuts for the rich, who are out there buying their own Tamiflu, by the way, are not doing anything about this for the rest of us. So maybe the place to start, rather than freaking out at a personal level, is to get out there and say, hey, you know, let's have some political action on this. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. Alice in Eureka, California. Hey, Alice, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom.
Hello,
and,
Alice.
And Dick Cheney made about a dozen more attempts to associate 911 with Iraq.
Yeah. Yep. And in his speech this morning, you mean? Alice?
What?
In his speech this morning, he did that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Alice, you're not old enough to remember the bird flu or the flu epidemic of 1918, are you?
Oh, I sure do. I even had it.
You did? What year were you born, if you don't mind my asking?
14.
1914. So you were a child and you had the flu of 1918. Yeah. You were 4 years old. And what's your recollection of that time? What was it like?
Well, I don't know. I was just out of it.
Yeah. So you were.
You know,
I was just
a kid, and I don't know. We weren't alarmed that we had it.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of other people that were really. Oh, it was sad. Wiped out families.
Yeah, my mother tells the story of her father. Now, this was before she was born. She was born in the 1920s. But she tells the story of the stories that she heard in the community in Charlevoix, Michigan, where she grew up, of her father being one of a group of volunteer men who would go out at, in the afternoons and deliver food to the families of people who were sick with the flu during the flu epidemic in 1918, and how many of their friends died, how many people that were friends of her parents, both her parents survived it, but how many people who were friends of her parents did not make it through the flu epidemic of 1918, and how basically it shut down the city government, it decimated the police department. It was a very serious problem, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Ours was in Fargo, North Dakota. That's
uh-huh.
where I was at the time I had it.
Yeah. Now, I understand it also hit different parts of the country in different ways, that it started out on the East Coast very, very virulent, and by the time it got to California, it was not killing so many people, that as it traveled across the country, it got weaker.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. Alice, you are a true treasure, the institutional memory of the United States in our wise elders.
Well, I love my country.
I do too. I do, too, and I thank you for calling the program so regularly and being here with us. Thank you, Alice.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. 1-866-440-THOM. Keith in Kent, Washington. Hey, Keith, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. I, too, count Alice among our wise elders, and there are many. And it's our resource for us to investigate with our parents and grandparents how did they cope, because we're in a cope mode. You know, we're talking about the avian flu and, you know, jokes aside, it's for the birds. I have to employ 12-step principles of you know, I only control what I can control. And
that's right. And just live today.
And I tell you, when you're talking about Dick Cheney, you know, I think it's the ultimate in naivete to believe that this man who speaks of nuclear annihilation would not go so far as to perpetrate mass murder upon his people. There are people like Michael C. Rupert who believe if you Google Cheney 9/11/01 NORAD defense exercises, that you'll find that there are people who believe that's how deep these people's beliefs run and how much they must be stopped. In a perfect world, Michael C. Rupert is attorney general and Dick Cheney is tried by a military tribunal in secrecy.
Well, you know, I'm not willing to try him for crimes quite yet, but I certainly certainly think that he has committed political crimes of an epic proportion. I mean, this big lie stuff that Dick Cheney is trying to foist on us is so beyond the partisan nature of it. It is so destructive to democracy in the United States.
And
that's the true tragedy.
Conspiracy aside, on Friday again with Mr. Murtha, they control the dialogue. They turned his statement, which was give us a plan and redeploy and come up with an answer for why we're doing what we're doing. They turned that into cut and run. And it was an absolute travesty and a sham to see that they took his words and used them against him.
Yeah. And Jack Murtha is a great American hero. Congressman Earl Blumenauer, a congressman here from Oregon, just today came out in favor of saying staying the course is no longer an option. He says President Bush's model of go it alone, do it cheap, and put it on a credit card has not only led to grave instability in Iraq, it's also crippling our ability to deal with more serious strategic threats from Iran and North Korea to a terrorist movement that we have inadvertently strengthened. And I hope it's inadvertently.
And staying the course inevitably brings up the question, what course? Is there even a course? Has there
well,
even
like the song we use for our bumper music, you can't stay the course on a horse that's going the wrong way.
Happy Thanksgiving, Tom.
Yeah, thanks a lot. You too, Keith. Have a good one. Good talking to you. I appreciate your calling. It's the Tom Hartmann Radio Program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception, the place where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. That's what we've got to do if we want to take this country back. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
I am a citizen of the planet. I was born here. I'm going to die here. Come what may.
And welcome back, my friends. 9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartmann here with you. We're the place where reason is our lifestyle choice. Yes, Vice President Dick Cheney today made a striking claim a few minutes ago. They note over at thinkprogress.org at the American Enterprise Institute. He said, and I quote, "Those who advocate a sudden withdrawal from Iraq should answer a couple simple questions." Now, this is what's so weird. Nobody's advocating a sudden withdrawal. Jack Murtha's proposal, do it over a period of weeks or months, you know, whatever. Do it in a way that's safe to the American soldiers. Anyhow, he says, "Those who advocate a sudden withdrawal from Iraq should answer a couple simple questions. Would the United States and other free nations be better off or worse off with Zarqawi bin Laden and Zawahiri in control of Iraq? Would we be safer or less safe with Iraq ruled by men intent upon the destruction of our country?" Well, you know, this suggests, first of all, there's no evidence to support this claim. Secondly, it suggests that Iraq would be incapable of defending itself against terrorists. And I got to say, the only reason that there's so much terrorism going on in Iraq right now directed against Americans is because the civilian populace approves of it. I mean, you look at the Pew polls, the polls that have been done, 80% of Iraqis say America should leave tomorrow morning. 55% of Iraqis, more or less, depending on which poll you look at, say that it's appropriate to attack Americans. And so to say that, you know, the Iraqis, if they were given their country back, would not say, hey, wait a minute, you know, we were fine blowing up Americans, but we're not so sure we want to be blowing up Iraqis. Come on, give us, Cheney, give us some credit for common sense, would you? 1-866-440-THOM. Jason in Seattle Washington on the line. Hey, Jason, what's up?
How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better.
Okay. I am in the middle of your book, What Would Jefferson Do? Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
On Sunday, I just caught the last end of Meet the Press, and I had just finished the chapter that you had talked about corporations wanting more regulation, so it makes it harder for the smaller companies to pay the fines and everything.
Right. And a lot of big corporations use regulation as a tool to prevent competition. Yeah.
Exactly. And then I turn on Meet the Press. I only caught the last 20 minutes of it, and they were talking about the bird flu at the end. And the guy who was on there, I don't know his name, he was talking about how these large pharmaceutical companies need more liability, so they're not responsible for what happens. I'm paraphrasing because it was a few days ago.
They need regulations that give them less liability. The whole point of, the point that I made about regulation is that if we know, for example, that arsenic is a poison and you're emitting 10 parts per million of arsenic into the water, you're poisoning people, and you could be prosecuted for that. But if you can convince the government to pass a regulation saying that as long as it's 10 parts per million or less, it's legal, then you can continue putting arsenic in the water and be immune from prosecution.
Exactly.
And so with regard to the bird flu, what they're saying is we'd like to be able to, to manufacture anything we want, and if we screw up, nobody can sue us. And there may be a time and place for that, actually, frankly. I mean, there are times, there are emergencies, and you have to set aside, full speed ahead, damn the torpedoes, or whatever the phrase is,
Well, yeah, I understand that, but as a preemptive, it doesn't seem like it makes much sense to say we don't want to kill I understand they don't want to kill people, but to say that we should have more of this and this in order so that it's...
Well, and there is a consideration at law of intent, and most of the cases where companies are prosecuted for screwing things up in ways that killed people, they're prosecuted because they continued to do it after they knew about it and they continued to hide it. And typically when a company finds that their product is no good, they pull the product, and that's the end of that. And, maybe the people who were harmed can sue, but, there's no huge thing. Anyhow, just in rapid summary, Jason, your point.
Well, that was pretty much it. I mean, you've summed it up for me.
Okay, great. Jason, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Sean in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hey, Sean.
Hey, Tom. I don't call as often as I used to, but I assure you I'm there front and center every day.
Well, great. It's great to hear from you, Sean.
I think that we really need to be worried about the bird flu when we see Neil Horsley going to Asia with a bottle of Viagra and a box of condoms. but anyway, I wanted to tell you... I've been holding that joke for about a month now.
Probably most people don't remember that Neil Horsley was the right-wing conservative who runs the anti-abortion website where he has pictures of abortion doctors, so you too can kill an abortion doctor, who admitted on Alan Colmes' show that he likes to have sex with donkeys and cows and other animals.
Yeah, well, when we see him buying leather chicken suits, that's when we need to start getting worried.
Yeah, anyway, so your original Neil Horsley joke was you have to worry about the bird flu when you see Neil Horsley heading to Asia with a bottle of Viagra and a box of condoms. Okay. Anyhow, it's a family show, Sean. What's your main point?
Yeah, that's why I didn't get more graphic. Anyway, my infectious disease doctor, who I've had for about 15 years and has seen me do about 150 surgeries,
mm-hmm.
He's really, really, really good. And he tells me that this is like the scare of the month type of thing, the bird flu.
Well, right now it is. I mean, there is no human contagious bird flu right now. And this thing has been wild for 5 years. And it might be wild forever, and it might be wild for another 5 years, and it might be wild for another 15 years. Or it might mutate into a human transmissible form tomorrow.
And
it may be...
That we should let our guard down, not by any stretch of the imagination, but, it's not as crucial as all these alarmists, are...
Well, let's hope he's right, Sean. Let's hope he's right. And I think we do have to keep that in perspective, and not only that, that the bird flu isn't the only virus or microorganism out there that has the potential to mutate into a human transmissible form. I mean, if Ebola becomes aerosolized and half as deadly, there's just no shortage. Laurie Garrett wrote a great book about this. It's like 800 pages long, called The Coming Plague. If you want to really get nervous, it's actually a brilliant book. It's 57 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Truth and common sense in broadcasting, the Tom Hartman radio program. Emergency money that President George W. Bush requested to combat a looming influenza pandemic has been deleted from a U.S. health funding bill after conservative Republicans insisted it would have to be paid for by cutting other government programs. In other words, we'll only save you from the bird flu if you will allow us to slash Medicare. The U.S. House of Representatives on Thursday was set to debate the massive health funding bill after days of intense talk between the House and Senate. This Reuters negotiators dropped a plan for $8 billion in funds the Democrats pushed through the Senate last month. Yeah. Fight erupted after conservative Republicans in the House insisted that an emergency U.S. effort to stockpile vaccines and antiviral drugs that could be effective against the deadly flu would have to be paid for by cutting other government programs. Jerry Lewis, House Appropriations Committee Chairman Jerry Lewis, not the actor, the politician, a California Republican, helped block the emergency funds. Amazing. Arizona Representative Jeff Flake, one of several conservative Republicans pushing for less government spending, told Reuters he would try to kill any avian flu legislation that does not offset the spending with cuts to other programs. How about offsetting the spending with cuts to tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires? Fact of the matter is, you want to pull $7 or $8 billion out of domestic programs, you simply can't do it. There's no money there. Ralph Regula, the Ohio Republican who oversees health care funding in the House, says there's no way to offset $7 or $8 billion. Incredible. Our quote for the day from Teddy Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, the Republican president of the United States, December 3rd, 1907, to waste, to destroy our natural resources, to skin and exhaust the land instead of using it so as to increase its usefulness would result in undermining in the days of our children the very prosperity which we ought by right to hand down to them, amplified and developed. Teddy Roosevelt, who essentially created the national park system in the United States. Folks in the chat room talking about it's interesting. How will the fundies deal with this thing? You have a virus that is evolving. It's going through the process of evolution. But there is no evolution. Well, how did all these bacteria become antibiotic resistant? They evolved. Well, let's use the word mutate instead. But if a mutation is beneficial, that's evolution. If a mutation is not beneficial, then the organism dies. Okay. Well, anyhow, I started out back to the political scene here. I want to just wrap this thing up with our torture president. Dick Cheney out there giving a speech today. Obviously, the reason that he did it, number one, they're trying to gain the political high ground. Number two, he's trying to change the subject. You had a former director of the Central Intelligence Agency over the weekend on national television calling Dick Cheney the torture president. And he's just trying to change things. Dick Cheney just feels like, you know, he's got to change the discussion. He's got to change the topic. This is standard operating procedure for this administration that when things aren't going well, you just try and scare the bejesus out of people. For example, on Sunday, there was a story in The Independent in the UK, this all over Europe, probably would have been all over the United States if Cheney hadn't gotten out and given a speech. British trained police operating in Basra have tortured at least two civilians to death with electric drills. Their bodies were found with drill holes in their arms, legs, and skulls. Despite being pressed very hard by Britain, however, the Iraqi authorities in Basra are failing to even investigate incidents of torture and murder by police, ministers admit. More than 170 starving and tortured prisoners were discovered last week in an interior ministry bunker in Baghdad. American troops who uncovered the secret torture chamber are also said to have discovered mutilated corpses, several bearing drill marks. Drill marks. In the U.S.-controlled districts of Iraq, some senior military and intelligence officials have been accused of giving tacit approval to the extrajudicial actions of counterinsurgency forces. Critics claim... Actually, before I read you this sentence, let me just remind you of a little bit of history. In Central America, in the 1980s, during the Reagan administration, there was a movement in Nicaragua to create a government that was semi-socialist, to nationalize a bunch of industries, to throw out some of the largest multinational corporations, and to essentially say Nicaragua is for Nicaraguans. Not unlike Hugo Chavez is doing in Venezuela right now. And the Reagan administration went nuts. This is communism, they said. And they began a war against a democratically elected government to take these guys out. And they sent down John Negroponte. He goes down as our ambassador to El Salvador, I believe it was. It was Honduras. And all of a sudden, you're discovering all throughout the region, you're discovering death squads. These extrajudicial executions, right? The off-duty police officers and just, you know, guys who would join up. Yeah, let's go out there. Yeah, we'll take care of this. Yeah, commies, we'll get them. Death squads. And people started showing up 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 at a time, hands tied behind their backs, execution style, bullet through the head, torture victims. You know, not a good thing, right? So, anyhow, that happens in Central America. Then John Negroponte, you know, a few years later, we sent him to Iraq as our ambassador to Iraq. And guess what happens? Suddenly, we're discovering death squads in Iraq. And here now from the Independent, this is the yesterday's article. In the U.S.-controlled districts of Iraq, some senior military and intelligence officials have been accused of giving tacit approval to the extrajudicial actions of counterinsurgency forces. Critics claim the situation echoes American collaboration with military regimes in Latin America and Southeast Asia during the Cold War, particularly in Vietnam, where U.S.-trained paramilitaries were used to kill opponents of the South Vietnamese government. You know, it is possible to win the hearts and minds of people. It really is. It's how we went from being basically the only democracy in the world in 1776 to being one of about 100, more or less, right now. And but now what do we have? We're waterboarding people. And in the process, we're getting lousy intelligence. I mean, in a very real way, this article by ABC News on Saturday that says that Ibn al-Shaikh al-Libi, the guy who after 2 weeks of torture, finally, when he was waterboarded and then left to stand naked in a cold cell overnight where he was repeatedly doused with cold water at regular intervals, finally says, okay, you want to know if Saddam is working with al-Qaeda to create biochemical weapons? I'll tell you that he is. Just stop it. He knew nothing about it, this guy. He knew nothing about it. He made it up to stop them from torturing him, and then that information got stovepiped right up to Dick Cheney's office, and Dick Cheney took that information right to the national news. And he goes on the national news programs and says, we have it from a reliable source, I'm paraphrasing, Saddam Hussein is developing these weapons. And it was phony information. And the CIA knew it was phony information because it was obtained through torture. The main reason not to have torture is because it doesn't work. It's not the most effective way to get information, even over the short term. Even if you're talking over an hour, we got to get the information within an hour, torture isn't going to do it. You'll get information. It's not going to be useful information. And this is what's happened. I mean, how many, go back to 2004, the election cycle, how many of those red alerts, you know, Tom Ridge cranking the fear factor up, red alert, terror warning, terror alert, how many of those came as a result of torture? People saying, yeah, okay, you want to know? Yes, there's another plan. Yes, just stop the electrodes. How many of those came as real? We don't know. It's classified. But we do know that an awful lot of lousy, that a whole lot of Americans panicked a whole lot of times in 2004 leading up to the election. 16 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
See how they explain the inexplicable. Watch them all debate the undebatable. Apparently alive, it's never liable. Prime time for a talk show streamer.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number, 440-THOM. My name? TomHartman.com, by the way, our website, if you want to drop into our live chat room and discover what that's all about, you know, live chat rooms? No, this is not one of those kind of live chat rooms. This is actually a pretty cool place, and love to have you drop by. So welcome back to our program, the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America. In a very real way, you could say that the United States is in a... I wanted to say stupid war, but how do you say it? What? We are in the midst of a war that we shouldn't be in. We have, because of torture. These guys tortured people after 9/11 to get information. The information was wrong, as information usually is from torture. Case in point, Ibn al-Saik al-Libi. The guy, after 2 weeks of torture, finally says, oh, yeah, absolutely. Saddam has a biological weapons laboratory underneath the Baghdad hospital. Just bomb the hospital. And Cheney uses that information to justify a war. And now Cheney wants us to continue torturing. And so, of course, he's got to go on TV and attack Jack Murtha and say, be afraid, be very afraid. Incredible. And now, by the way, the House Ethics Committee has decided that they're going to decide whether or not they're going to look into Jack Murtha because his brother has a lobbying firm, and his brother's lobbying firm has some clients who do business with the military, and Jack Murtha's on the committee that oversees the defense appropriations in the House. I mean, are you getting this? I mean, this is like payback to Jack Murtha. I mean, how wrong and sick and toxic is that? And then this weekend, here's another reason why Dick Cheney's on today, because this weekend, Colonel Larry Wilkerson, who speaks for George Herbert Walker Bush, many people believe, and speaks for Colin Powell, many people believe. He used to be Colin Powell's right-hand man. Retired U.S. Army Colonel Larry Wilkerson, this is from CNN, told CNN that the practice of torture may be continuing in U.S.-run facilities. Yesterday, he told Wolf Blitzer, he says, there's no question in my mind that we did torture. There's no question in my mind we may still be doing it. There's no question in my mind where the philosophical guidance and the flexibility in order to do so originated in the Vice President of the United States office. The Vice President had to cover this in order for it to happen and in order for Secretary Rumsfeld to feel as though he had the freedom of action. So here you have the former number two guy in the State Department coming forward and saying Dick Cheney is responsible for torture, which is, by the way, responsible for us being in a war that is, by the way, responsible for the death and maiming and dismemberment of some 17, 18, 19,000 Americans and as many as 100,000 Iraqis. And so Dick Cheney, of course, has to go on the air today and change the subject as quickly as he can. So everybody in the news media will talk about something other than what Wilkerson said yesterday. I mean, what else can he do? Does Cheney, I mean, in the news cycle, do they want them talking about the fact that they're discovering that British trained police in Iraq are killing prisoners with electric drills, that they're finding bodies, dead bodies with drill holes in their arms, their legs, and skulls? It's a step beyond waterboarding, I'll give you. But how far? I mean, once you open the door to torture, where do you stop? And again, you don't get useful information. It is the stupidest way. We've got incredibly sophisticated drugs. We've got incredibly sophisticated psychological techniques where you knock somebody out with a drug for 15 minutes and you change the set around them and they wake up thinking it's a year later. I mean, there's some really fancy stuff you can do so that in a one-hour period you can actually get information out of people. And it allows us to maintain our moral standing around the world, but more important, you actually get accurate information. 1-866-440-THOM. Larry in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks a lot, Tom. Over the weekend, about 19,000 people stood in front of the gates at Fort Benning, Georgia, protesting the old School of the Americas, which has got a new name now. They're protesting the torture. 40 human rights activists crossed the line and were arrested. But during the 80s, during the Iran-Contra, another name that you didn't bring up, Elliot Abrams, was instrumental in the training of the Contras and supplying them with the logistics and the support. He was one of the only people convicted for the Iran-Contra crimes.
And Ollie North and John Poindexter.
He has been retreaded back into the Bush administration. He went to Colombia for a while, and then he moved over to the Middle East.
Yeah, not that different from Poindexter, by the way.
Exactly right. Now, this man, 1 week prior to Rafiq Hariri, came back to the United States and was promoted. Now, I believe that, I have no proof, but I do believe that he was instrumental in part of that. There's good evidence that has been brought forward by leading journalists over in Israel that they were part of it, and he spent a lot of time in Israel promoting that.
These guys are so incredibly good. Yeah, exactly, Larry. These guys are so good at burying this stuff. And I'm telling you, I've been saying for 2 years, you know, Georgia's war for the 2006 elections will be Syria and 2008 will be Iran. We'll see. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And just because he said that there was weapons hidden under pigsties over there.
We can't pick on him for that.
Just because my boy may never make it home again. Don't mean he don't care.
Yeah, he's a compassionate conservative, our boy George. Don't you get it? I mean, he's just a compassionate conservative. And it's that Dick Cheney guy with all the growling and snarling. Oh, my. Welcome back, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC. It's time for our best of the rest of the news segment, where we take a look at what's happened in the previous week and what's coming up in the next week. What are the top stories? What are the things that we'll be thinking about 5 years from now, looking back and saying, whoa, you know, yeah, that was that moment in time. We have with us Vanessa Cerulli, who's the assistant editor at Common Dreams, commondreams.org, and Judd Legum, who is the director of research with the Center for American Progress. And Vanessa, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom.
Great to have you here. And Judd, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
I am very pleased and honored to have you both on. I use the work of both of you, the websites of both of you, as a regular resource on this program. So, Judd, I'm curious. You folks are really in the middle of the you know, helping spin the counterspin, as it were. And it seems this morning that Dick Cheney's speech was an attempt to deflect discussion away from, for example, over the weekend, his being a former CIA director, referring to him as the torture vice president, and you know, all these, a lot of allegations being thrown his way. Do you think he's going to be successful in changing the dialogue?
Well, I don't think with the approach that he's pursuing now. I've been following his speeches. His speech this morning wasn't too much different than what he was saying previously, and it's very backward-looking. He's looking back at the run-up to war, defending the Bush administration's conduct. But the problem is, when you dive into that, there's a number of very clear comments that Cheney made on several occasions that were clearly false, and all the evidence points to the fact that he had reason to know they were false. So I don't think reminding people of that repeatedly is going to push the poll numbers up.
Do you think that the, hey, you were suckers to believe me defense is actually going to work? Because, I mean, that's the subtext of all of this. All these other people believed the information we gave them.
Yeah. Well, one, that's a lie, is that they didn't have the same information. They didn't have the presidential daily briefs. They didn't have all the raw intelligence that formed the NIE, which happened to have all the caveats in it showing why this information wasn't necessarily accurate. So that's
right.
That's just not accurate that they had it. But at the same time, I mean, look, for better or for worse, President Bush is the president, Vice President Cheney is the vice president. It was their decision to go to war. They want to make it seem like, well, the decision was made when the resolution was signed. That isn't correct. And President Bush said as much in 2002 into 2003. He would say,
but people's memories are short.
Even the thing, I hadn't made up my mind.
Yeah, Judd, but people's memories are short. My guess is that a lot of Americans actually think that our Congress voted for war.
Well, probably so, because they're listening to all this misinformation. But I think the problem is you can only keep up the lie so long. That's what's happening, and that's why you find the president about 36%, because finally people are saying, hey, we've been in Iraq 2.5 years. Where are we? What's all? We remember all your promises. Where are they? And I think that's what's happening.
More time has passed from Pearl Harbor to the end of World War II than has passed from 9/11 to today. So it's a lot of people scratching their heads going, hey, wait a minute. Vanessa Cerulli, the assistant editor at CommonDreams.org. Vanessa, when folks look back at this last week or at this weekend, at this point in time, based on what you're seeing going by at CommonDreams.org, what do you think most folks are going to say? You know, that was a major turning point. That was really the big story.
Oh well, that's a great question, but I think the fact that Murtha was actually on, you know, Meet the Press the other night, and his comments about, you know, getting out of Iraq were pretty pertinent for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of am looking at a bunch of other stuff too, all the things that come through the newswire at Common Dreams. And, you know, one big thing that happened this week that I think is really underreported is that the Environmental Working Group has uncovered some new stuff about DuPont. And I think it's just been really underreported for a lot of years.
Yeah, we had a guest from the Environmental Working Group on the program about on our local program about 4 hours ago for a 15-minute period. He was talking about this new chemical. I'm forgetting the acronym. It's a four-letter acronym, and it's a
PFOA.
PFOA, thank you. And it's in 98% of all Americans' blood?
Absolutely. It definitely is. According to this release from the Environmental Working Group, it's in everyone's blood. It's also transmitted through, you know, the umbilical cords of women to fetuses. So basically, babies are being born without having had any other exposure besides, you know, the placenta. You know.
And this is a chemical that literally did not exist before the 1960s. I mean, you know, millions of years of evolution to produce the human race, 170,000 years of humans running around loose on this planet, and all of a sudden we're confronted with this brand new chemical, and it's in all of our blood.
Right.
You're right. That could be a huge story, although the toxicity of it still is yet to be determined, is it not?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, the EPA says, you know, they're kind of still out on it, you know, they're judging on it. But, you know, considering that there's children being born in DuPont, you know, factories that have been exposed to this particular chemical, the PFOAs, you know, it seems to me like it's pretty toxic. You know, they've been born with birth defects. It causes all kinds of liver disease, kidney kidney diseases, cancer diseases in you know, from a study way back in 1973 that was done on rats and dogs, and they pretty much all died in the end. So, I mean,
I'm assuming there's an article about that at commondreams.org.
Well, you know, we haven't run an article. No, we haven't found a good enough one, actually, but that's why I'm saying it's very underreported. We've, you know, I ran it on the Newswire on the 16th of November, so it is up there, and Environmental Working Group just is doing a great job pulling stuff together, and their website is extensive. But this, you know, this drug is really, really scary. It's in all of us, and it's in all of the stuff that we touch every day. Everything from Teflon coatings, you know, on pots and pans to All-Clad, you know, like All-Clad even has this chemical. I mean, Glide,
the
dental floss.
Yeah, to the paper that they wrap French fries and hamburgers in.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
In fact, that's the main use.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's food packaging because it's lipophilic. It's or lipophobic, I guess it is.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't allow lipids, fats to adhere to it, and so you can put it on paper, and all of a sudden the paper, you know, it's better than the old wax paper, basically.
Right, and it keeps the logo pretty while, you know, everything on the inside is just seeping in grease. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah,
okay. So these. That is a big one, Vanessa. Mm-hmm. Judd Legum, I'm wondering with the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. I'm wondering if you might, you know, what your thoughts are on this take on Jack Murtha. Vanessa just mentioned Jack Murtha, and mm-hmm. my take on this is that the Republicans have been planning on probably at least a 50% troop pull down between now and the elections of 2006, and a major redeployment to the bases within Iraq that we're building and outside. Basically, that they're going to do what Jack Murtha is proposing, perhaps over a time period that might be a few months longer than his, but really not that much different. And that, but that they couldn't begin it until after the December elections, because that was going to be their fig leaf. That was going to be their excuse. And that now what's happened, because a Democrat got out in front of this, if they do it, it's going to look like they're caving into the Democrats' suggestions, and it's going, you know, their political juice is gone, and that's the source of their rage. Do you think that's possible?
Well, I think that could be. Rumsfeld yesterday on the Sunday shows made it very clear that right after the election, they're going to go down from about 159,000 troops to 138,000. So they're already announced they're going to withdraw 21,000 troops, and then gave very strong indications they're going to look for opportunities to draw down further from there. And I think especially in the run-up to the elections, there'll be a lot of very strong pressure for them to significantly draw down that number. So exactly, Murtha presents political problems, especially when they go about calling him, you know, saying he's aligned with, you know, he's now aligning himself with only the far left extremists in the Liberal Party. He's Michael Moore. You know, if they go turn around in 3 months from now, start adopting the Michael Moore strategy, I don't think that's going to play very well with their political base.
Well, they're going to have to reinvent it, aren't they?
Well, then that's what they'll do, they'll reinvent it, and it'll be their idea. But we'll see. You know, I think they're very eager when they do withdraw the troops. They really want to wait and see if they can do so at a time when'll, you know, when they can try to spin this whole thing as a success. So if there's more violence and more chaos after the election, as there's been after some of these other elections, you might find them, you know, keeping a lot of those troops in there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see how it plays out. We're talking with Judd Legum. He is the Director of Research with the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website. And Vanessa Cerulli, who is the Assistant Editor of Common Dreams, www.commondreams.org. Two of the really best sites out there on the web if you want you know, hot news information and find out what's going on in commentary and thoughtful insights into things that are going on. We'll also, can both of you stick around over a break and we can pick it up on the other side?
Sure.
You bet.
Okay, great. It would be a good plan to do that, I think. We've also got a few callers who we can bring into the line. Maybe they'll have some questions on this thing, because the reality is this is just a huge news week right now. A lot going on here. One of the stories that just popped out at me is they're finding prisoners with evidence, you know, finding corpses of prisoners who have arms, legs, and skulls that have been drilled with drills, apparently as torture attempts. You know, we'll get into the torture issue after this break. Talking with Judd Legum of American Progress, and Vanessa Cerulli of Common Dreams.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Once I built an empire, made it run, made big bucks all the time, controlled the global market. Now I'm done. China, can you spare a dime?
And it turns out they can't. China basically said to George, tough luck. You want religious freedom here? No, ain't going to happen. You want political freedom? It ain't going to happen. You want us to reduce our exchange rates on our currency? No, ain't going to happen. You want us to open our market? No, sorry. George will pat you on the head. And by the way, that door is locked. And then we'll send you home. Amazing. The George W. Bush coming home with his tail between his legs, as they say. We're talking with Vanessa Cerulli, the assistant editor of CommonDreams.org, and Judd Legum, who is the director of research at the Center for American Progress. And welcome back, both of you. Just make sure I'm not mispronouncing either of your names, am I?
No, you're doing all right.
Oh, perfect.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. I'm curious, Vanessa, what do you see as the direction? What's the flow of the news? What are you expecting over the next week or two that is going to be emerging, that's going to be coming into our consciousness? A lot of people getting hysterical about bird flu, for example, or Syria,
right,
things like this. What are the things that you see bubbling?
Oh, you know, I mean, what station are you talking about? On Fox, it'll probably be, you know, a Thanksgiving Day car chase or something, right?
Yeah, or another missing white girl.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was going to say that. I didn't know if I could say that on the radio.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
You know, I mean, Judd would probably know better where it's going to spin. But, you know, something Craig and I were talking about the other day is that just yesterday is just sort of the parallels between Iraq and Vietnam, you know, which are getting a lot of ink lately. And we were just saying, you know, around this time in Vietnam, I would say that the government was starting to invent peace accords all over the place. So I don't know. I kind of predict maybe this week we'll see some peace accords, considering that Bush, you know, didn't do so great in China. And like you said.
Oh, you're right. You know, that could be the fig leaf that Judd and I were talking about a few moments ago.
Maybe.
The excuse, the segue.
Right. Interesting. Something to distract us.
Yeah. Judd, same question to you. What do you see coming down the road?
Well, I'll tell you, one issue that's really kind of in the background now, but that could become a big issue in the next couple of weeks or the next month, is the Fitzgerald investigation. Mm-hmm. You know, Scooter Libby was indicted. It kind of receded from the front pages, but the investigation is still active. It was recently reported that he went to a new grand jury, which if you talk to some of these criminal defense attorneys, suggests to them that it's very likely he's at least considering new criminal charges. So if that's the case and if that happens, that could be a really big story.
Yeah, although, you know, this is, what, 688 days into this investigation, and Watergate was 200 and some odd days. It's might be a little while.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, you know, if you read the reporting, even Rove's people are saying they expect it to be settled in a matter of weeks rather than months. A person to look out for, the Times of London reported that Woodward's source was Stephen Hadley. Now, it's unclear whether that's true or not. Stephen Hadley's been pretty coy about it. He said that he heard other administration officials quoted in the press saying it wasn't him, but refused to say that it wasn't, but refused to directly say that it wasn't him. He said his answer is what it is, which is in contrast to a lot of other administration officials, Condi Rice, the president, the vice president, straight down the line, who flatly deny it was them.
Yeah, just saying it wasn't me. Definitely. Let's take a couple of quick calls, and either of you can bounce off them. Paul in San Francisco, California. Paul, you're live and on the air. What's up?
Hi, I like that comment your woman guest made about the peace accords coming up, because I think that's really the future news stories. You know, what Murtha had to say is really important, and what's going to happen, I think, in the elections coming up is all the candidates are going to be talking about withdrawal, and then after the elections they'll go back to funding the war, because they actually need the oil and they think they can win the war, which they can't. But that's what happened during Vietnam, is that any time candidates would run, they would run and say, oh, yeah, I'm for withdrawal. And then after they'd get elected, they would ignore what they said, and they would go push the war.
And just go their merry way. Thank you, Paul, for that. Vanessa, quick thought?
Yeah, I mean, I just would agree with him. You know, like I said, you know, we've been talking about that, and I think it's a great way to sort of spin, you know, pull out into the administration's favor. You know,
right?
Yep. It just seems the most logical. It's a way to, you know, sort of pacify both sides.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Logan in New York City, you're live and on the air. Hey, Logan.
Hey, how you doing? I've just been noticing a trend, I mean, with Clinton and also with Bush, that they're able to declare war without Congress. And I just wanted to know when that power passed over to them. And and isn't it important that they don't have that power?
Good one. Judd, you want to take a shot at that?
Well, it passed over to President on in October of 2002 when Congress voted to give him the authority to go to war in Iraq. And I and a lot of other people think that was a mistake, but that was the problem there. Now, there is this issue where if you do something operation short of war, you're able to do that. And that's been something that there's been a push and pull over between Congress and the executive branch for some time about what requires congressional authorization. But with this case here, Congress gave him the authorization. You know, I think maybe trusting that he would use it only if it was absolutely necessary, and they got burned on that.
Wasn't that, though, Judd, a contingent authorization? I mean, there were a whole bunch of things that he had to do first, including working with the UN and making sure that the inspection process had been exhausted.
Yeah, but I think it would have been smarter just to wait until they were ready to have him really do it. I mean, the problem was, exactly, they tried to sell it to Congress as, we need this as a cudgel to try to do everything else. But really, they had their mind set on invading Iraq from the beginning, I think. And there's
absolutely
really a problem.
In fact, from before the beginning. We've been talking with Vanessa Cerulli at CommonDreams.org, Judd Legum, Director of Research with the Center for American Progress. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
You're great. Both your organizations doing great work. Check out CommonDreams.org, AmericanProgress.org. And thank you very much for being so very much for being with us today. Remember, activism begins with all of us. It begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.